Chapter 13. The Damned Quarter. Erin, an acolyte of the Church of the One, crinkled his nose.
Pure man Salem, he stinks, and badly.
That he does, Erin, that he does.
The grizzled Salem rubbed his scraggly black and grey beard, a beard that paid no compliment to the puffy face and thinning hair of a man whose rough, pock-marked skin had been sculpted by the sun, wind, and rain. Salem glanced back at the young man in the cart.
"Reminds me of the time we was laid up deep in the King's Blood Sea. Hot as the black sand waste in the summer and about as much wind as comes out of either side of a dead man. Didn't matter whether you was above decks or below decks, you sweat so much you could scrape the salt off your skin with a knife. That was stinking, lad. Of course, everyone stank. Though some more than others, you understand. You could kill fish with your stench just by jumping in the water.
Erin sighed.
That was a delightful story, Pure Man Salem. How fortunate that the prelate chose me to be your acolyte. I may not be able to heal anyone by the time you're done with me, but I'll have an excellent collection of sea stories with which to sicken the heart of the already ill. Either end of a dead man. Did you have to say that?
Farging piece of schmite, Salem erupted.
He held little respect for his high-born companion and his milky white skin, wavy brown hair, and unmanly aversion to everything not scrubbed by a servant.
You'd best be grateful you got any appointment at all after the circumstances of your coming into the Brotherhood and all.
Farging? Schmite? You made those up, didn't you? With your background, you should have better curses at your command.
Look here, acolyte, Salem chastised. Eldaloth himself taught that we shouldn't swear or profane. Men in my former profession swear as much as they possibly can, whenever they can. I worked so long and hard to overcome my poor speech. You respect it, or I'll put one hand on your collar and one foot up your... or I'll kick you right off this wagon and you'll be walking the rest of the way to Rugoth.
I would think, Erin opined, that farging is pretty much the same as saying that other word. The feeling behind it is certainly the same. After all, if I straight out tell a woman she isn't pretty, isn't it just the same as if I had said she were ugly? Same feeling, same intent, same sadness caused, same sin.
Who is the acolyte here? Salem asked, dander up. I'll be doing a teaching about sin. Now, as to the young man in the back there, if you think he stinks so bad you can bathe him once we get to a river wider than a horse trough.
Then you'll have two sick and crazy people to take care of. Do we have to take him all the way to Rugoth? The church runs a fine sanatorium in Cairum, not 2 days from here.
Salem snorted.
You noble types, always scared of dirt and bodily fluids. You wouldn't have lasted a minute on the Raven, not a one.
I'll take that as a compliment. But really, Salem, we can leave him in Cairum, right? Tell me we can.
No, Salem objected. He's not sanatorium sick, Erin. He's Mickick sick. He's possessed. It's the damned quarter for him if he can't be dispossessed.
Salem and Erin both glanced back at the stray they had found lying prone on the side of the road that morning. Days, maybe weeks, of wandering had ruined his clothes, his pants and cloak a mess of rips and dark stains, some of blood. He was covered from head to toe in mud, and he constantly muttered in what they figured were 3 different languages, common, the only familiar one. As they watched, he thrashed about and started yelling in one of the strange tongues.
"Demon possession, all right. He's talking the tongue of the Mickick, or I'm no pure man at all."
"The speech doesn't sound foul. Quite elegant, actually."
"Well, it would be if he weren't yelling it."
"Ah, but there's the thorn," Salem gesticulated, taking one hand off the reins. "The words of evil are cloaked in beautiful guise to deceive us. Like an ugly street prostitute who wears pretty—"
"Please," Erin pleaded, "no more analogies."
"As you wish, lad," Salem acquiesced.
"You'll never get your own congregation if you can't file the rough edges of your sermons."
"True enough. But who needs a congregation when we've got so much good and kindness to do? Take this poor wretched lad. Doesn't need words. He needs food and looking after. Some of those uppity prelates and pure men might think preaching best, but I ain't yet met a man who liked the word of God on an empty stomach." "Well, we'll take this one direct to Prelate Shefston. If he can't exercise him, then I suppose he'll be set loose with the rest of them. Damned Quarter certainly doesn't need another crazy. You know the church has it out for you when they send you there. A real black eye on Mickmere, the Damned Quarter. A fine city otherwise.
He keeps saying that word Kaina over and over again, Erin observed after a long lull in the conversation. What do you suppose it means?
It's another name for the evil one, Salem answered firmly.
It is not. I've never heard of that one. You're making things up again.
A quick shove from Salem expelled Erin unceremoniously from the cart and onto the side of the road, sending him rolling in the dirt.
Hey, Salem, Erin yelled, standing and jogging to catch up. That really hurt, you farging bastard.
Now that was real swearing, Brother Erin. You need to repent.
No, I don't. I was talking about fish smite.
What?
Never mind, Salem. Can I get back in the cart?
If you can catch it, you can ride it,
Salem said, whipping the reins to spur the horse forward. Several hours and a long walk later, Erin lay to the side of the road wishing they could light a fire. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough wood in the Red Wind brakes to fill a cart half as big as theirs. The long journey bored him, and as much as he complained about Salem's salty stories, they at least provided a modicum of entertainment. Fortunately, Erin prodded Salem away from his putrid sea stories and onto the more fantastic, and sometimes just as brutal, stories about a general Harband from Rugoth. Erin couldn't believe half of them, outrageous as they were, but the story about Harband setting squirrels on fire and letting them loose in his commander's tent provided a welcome laugh, true or not. Erin rolled to his side. As usual, Salem had already drifted to sleep, mumbling real obscenities in his dreams. After tossing and turning for nearly an hour, Erin stood and went to the cart, finding the possessed young man standing behind it, back straight and hands behind him, as if at attention. Scars covered him from one end to the other, and Erin wondered how many were concealed beneath layers of dirt. He plugged his nose and stood in front of the poor fellow, looking him in the eyes to see if the young man would acknowledge his presence. He didn't. Face devoid of expression and eyes vapid.
What is your name?
Erin repeated the question several times.
Telmarin, Samian, Jen, Elberin, Regina, why couldn't I save her? Raphael, do you see her? Kaina, do you live? Will I meet you? Where are the trees? We're going the wrong way. Curse Telmarin, always has to have his way. We must warn the Duke. Cairn is coming. Fly, he will fly before us.
Erin shook his head. Clearly insane. Only one name of many meant anything. Erin surmised the young man was from some poor family in the south of Tolnor who had kicked him out the door because of his ailment, no longer able to care for him. By the scars, he'd had a rough life, probably on some cruel street. Salem's ministry was to travel Tolnor and care for the downtrodden, and the boy was their first find of the season. They had found no weapon with him upon the road where they encountered him, but Erin thought that even a soldier should not have so many scars upon him. If Salem hadn't thought him possessed, they would have travelled to Cairum and been done with it. But in Mickmere the church kept the possessed and others touched by Mickic in a separate place, not wanting to kill them, but wanting them kept together nonetheless. As they travelled north in the following days, the Wardwall Mountains slowly peaked up over the horizon. Snowy tips difficult to see against the bright blue sky. They passed the turnoff to Cairum, picking up supplies from Grib, a small trading post at the crossroads between the Lone Wall and Cairum Duchies. The boy took to sleeping a lot in the day, rising in the evening and standing guard in a soldierly stance. Erin noted his regimental behaviour, though the material of his clothes was clearly that of a peasant. They tried to coax him into bathing in the Wind River and Mirror Lake as they travelled by, but the young man resisted stubbornly and was too strong to force. 3 more days passed, and they descended the north side of the Wardwall Mountains into the beautiful Emerald Valley. Despite his indisposition, the young man stood in the wagon and gazed at the long lake, green grass, and newly bloomed wildflowers for nearly an hour, eyes bright with wonder. As they passed through a pine stand charred from a lightning fire, their charge moved quickly to one side of the wagon bed and stared intently at something in the brush. Not until the deer concealed there sprinted away did Erin see it, and he surmised that the boy had excellent vision. He still kept his rigid vigil every night, and Erin took some time to listen to the language he spoke to himself, finding it enchanting and even inspiring at times despite his inability to understand it. In stark contrast, Salem sang, fake swore, and told more disgusting sea stories than Erin thought possible for one man to accumulate, and he got even louder as they neared populated areas. Salem possessed a kind heart and a willingness to help anyone despite their station, and Erin would admire him for that if for nothing else. Salem always saw to everyone else's needs first. Fortunately, the brief spates of bad weather as they descended slowly down the rough road on the north side of the mountains provided something to talk about other than the time Salem's entire crew ate a bad batch of fish, or when they came upon a giant, vomiting sea monster who retched onto the deck of their ship. A story Erin didn't quite believe. The portal to Rugoth sat on a small island in the middle of the Emerald Lake. Several small towns clumped around the pristine body of water created a living for the lords and peasants who charged fees to take travellers by barge to the portal. As Erin, Salem and the boy neared one such city, Miravale, they found themselves behind a long caravan, waiting to be taken to the island portal. The ever-gregarious Salem had ample opportunity to serve and disgust everyone. Erin did his best to smooth over Salem's total lack of regard for good manners, though as an acolyte he could only correct Salem indirectly for fear the man would grab him and do something horrible to him that he'd learned during his seafaring days, like the time he found a crewman cheating at cards, tied him to the deck, and dumped a crate full of angry lobsters on him. Erin hated that story, wondering exactly what they had done to anger the lobsters. Salem would never say exactly what had happened to the victim, always ending the story with a sad shake of his head. The people of the caravan paid the strange boy no mind, used to the sight of the less fortunate and infirm along the road. Instead, they took their time frequenting the taverns and shops that lined the street. Half-naked boys, carrying buckets of water, charged a pittance to administer a drink to those who didn't want to go into a tavern for fear of losing their place in the line. Erin had seen such jockeying for position end in brutal fights. As the line got longer, several city guards appeared from a side street, split up, and started patrolling the file.
"This is going to take for farging ever," Salem complained grumpily as he climbed back into the driver's seat and picked up the reins. "If that boy would act a little more crazy, we could probably convince the town guard to push us to the front of the line." "But," he said, casting his eyes backward to where their charge sat serenely observing the scene, "he seems to have calmed down a great deal of late."
"I think he's getting better," Erin observed.
"Course he is," Salem crowed proudly. "Being with two churchmen interferes with the demon's power to use him. Gives me hope he can be cured, God willing."
"I don't think he's possessed. The two different languages he's speaking are beautiful. From what I've read, demon speech is coarse."
"We done talked of this afore. The deceiver uses pretty speech to trick us. Sounds fair, but there's a barb on every shiny silver hook."
"I think," Erin said, "that when the writ talks of fair or pretty speech, it's talking about using flattery or being eloquent, not speaking in another language." And for the next 2 hours, Erin found himself subjected to a long argument about the methods and signs of possession, though Salem's memory was such that the examples he gave were typically conglomerates of several different stories broken apart and refashioned to his purpose. Fortunately, the discussion, interspersed with diatribe, lasted long enough to pass the time until it was their turn. Ropes, pulleys, and horses pulled two barges back and forth to the portal island. Salem told Erin to put blinders on the horse. Once done, they watched as the long and flat barge glided to abut against the pier. A weathered, shirtless barge master signalled the next 3 wagons forward, of which Salem's wagon was last. The 2 wagons in front of them were piled high with straw that had been kept through the winter to be sold in Rugoth for higher prices than they could get in Tolnor. The barge master, a voice raspy, ordered someone from each wagon to take the reins of each horse to master it in case it got the jitters on the water. With effort, he lifted a rear gate and placed thick planks behind each cart's rear wheels to prevent them from rolling backward.
Erin found himself standing and stroking the horse soothingly as the barge got underway. It was early evening and a beautiful blue sky reflected on the calm water. Erin breathed in the clean air, relishing the view. Behind him, the Wardwall Mountains of Tolnor drifted away, and in front of him the tall, ragged Ironheart Mountains of Ogmere jutted forbiddingly skyward. Erin could just make out the wall running against the opposite shore that marked the boundary of Ogmere, homeland of the Ha'ulric. The portal island, drawing steadily closer, was flat and green with short grass, two large oak trees spreading their branches over the pier. While a major portal for commerce between Tolnor and Rugoth, the island's size only permitted a single wooden structure, the home of the portal mages that administered the critical location. Due to the excessive amount of traffic to the island, Rugoth had funded paving the road up to the portal in white granite stones. Movement in the corner of his vision prompted Erin to turn. His eyes widened. The boy stood on the edge of the wagon, and it appeared he meant to jump off into the water.
Salem!
Erin exclaimed. Salem turned about and reached backward to try to catch the boy's cloak, but before he could grab it, the lad jumped from the wagon side to the barge railing in an incredible display of agility. As casually as if strolling down a wide avenue, he walked the length of the barge rail, which was no thicker than the length of a man's finger. The barge master yelled at him to get down, but the young man continued until he stood at the front, arms crossed and staring at the island approaching before him. Salem, muttering fake curses, climbed down from the wagon and ambled forward as quickly as he could to soothe the barge master, explaining the boy's condition. From the way the barge master backed away, Erin figured Salem let drop the word possessed. And from that point on, the barge master stood as far from the boy as possible. Despite Salem's entreaties, the young man remained perched on the rail until the barge neared the pier on the opposite side. Thankfully, he walked calmly back down the rail and jumped back into their wagon.
"Mekik's trick, that,"
Salem judged darkly, frowning.
"I've seen acrobats who can do as much,"
Erin countered.
"You think he's an acrobat, do you?"
Salem replied.
"No, but extraordinary agility is hardly demonic."
Fortunately for Erin, the need to debark and pay the barge master precluded another argument. Unlike their experience waiting for the barge, trips through the portals took little time. The portal to Rugoth was large, framed in an arch made of the same pale stone as the road, now blushing a warm yellow in the late sun. At its base, Erin guessed the portal spanned nearly 30 feet. They watched as the clerk took the names of the company of the wagons ahead of them, finally coming to their wagon and recording their names in a large book for that purpose. Once done, the portal mage, dressed in a brilliant blue robe, walked out of the solitary building and stood near the portal base, concentrating. The portal flashed into existence, a brilliant metallic blue, the same colour as the mage's robe. The clerk waved all three wagons forward. Erin closed his eyes as they rolled through the portal. Since both he and Salem had passed through portals many times before, they were able to control the brief sensation of nausea and dizziness. They turned to their charge to see how he fared, finding him placid as usual in the weak light of the Rugothian morning.
"We know one thing about him," Erin said. "He's been through a portal before. If he were a Tolnorian peasant, that would be unlikely."
Salem grunted noncommittally. The Rugothian side of the portal was situated not 100 feet from the edge of the immense King's Blood Sea. Erin knew from his studies that before the shattering, there had been immense oceans one could sail on for months and never glimpse land. Since the shattering, the King's Blood Sea was the largest body of water yet discovered, though he'd heard rumours of one to rival it on the recently discovered Shroud Lake Shard. Around the portal, the aptly named city of Portal Gate still slept, the sun's light barely a stain on the horizon. For several minutes, Salem stared longingly at the large ships anchored on the lake, their hulls and masts shrouded in mist.
"We best be going,"
he finally said, as if trying to convince himself.
5 days to Mikmir."
They set off, taking the road west around the lake. The pine-framed road was beautiful to nose and eye, and the cool breeze of the sea refreshed tired eyes, but the time difference between portals always proved difficult, and Erin found himself slapped roughly awake by Salem more than once.
"You sleep now, you won't sleep tonight."
Perhaps due to the time change, the boy stayed awake more frequently in the daytime, sitting erect and watching his surroundings carefully. Still, he said little, and when he did, it was in one of the mysterious languages. His eyes often unfocused into emptiness for long stretches, and more than once, Erin made out the names Jen, Samian, Telmeron, and Elberon. Still, while his impoverished, filthy condition cast a pitiable light upon him, from time to time, Erin sensed an intelligence and self-command in their charge that scared him. If there were anything demonic about the young man, it was the cold, utterly controlled countenance that he wore with increasing frequency. Erin asked Salem who he thought the names the boy repeated might be, and Salem, of course, speculated the worst possible thing. Names of the creatures of the underworld currently inhabiting the soul of their passenger. Whatever training Salem had received to become a pure man, Erin speculated that it didn't involve a lot of reading, or perhaps remembering. All in all, Salem cared little for doctrine or ritual, but was quite fond of baseless speculation. If Salem had a motto, Erin thought it would have to be service before sermons, or love before learning. 3 days after the portal and 2 days from Mickmere, they crossed the immense west bridge that spanned the gap between two of the many shards that collectively formed Rugoth. Again the boy stood on the edge of the wagon, staring down into the abyss between shards with absolute calm. Erin hated the bridges and locked his eyes straight forward. The young man standing so casually caused the acolyte to feel the vertigo his ward apparently did not. Salem guided the wagon back toward the center of the bridge, and the boy hopped back into the wagon. As they exited on the other side, their charge shocked them both by leaning forward and asking, "How long until we arrive at Mickmere?" in clear common. Salem brought the wagon to a dead halt.
"What did you say, boy?" he inquired gruffly.
"Almeria Naionia se Mickmere."
"Bah, Mickick speak again."
Salem turned away, whipping the horse into a trot.
"Best get him off our hands as soon as possible."
"We will be there in 2 days," Erin said slowly, holding up two fingers. "What is your name?"
Erin watched as he struggled with the question, eyes narrowing and jaw clenching.
"My name is Jen," he said, emphasizing each word as if to convince himself he was correct.
Again, however, his eyes unfocused, and he slipped into another stupor for a couple of hours before sleeping until evening. As the road led through several sizable towns near Mickmere, they lodged in the outbuildings of two large churches for the next 2 nights. Jen, as Erin believed his real name to be, became the focus of much observation. Pure men and acolytes alike stopped to see the real case of possession that Salem loudly advertised everywhere they went. Unfortunately for them, Jen no longer mumbled, each day his eyes clearing and his stupors afflicting him with decreasing regularity. By their last night on the road, Erin would swear the boy was fully cognizant. He still stood guard from time to time, but intelligence and keen awareness completely replaced the void in his gaze. And when a group of acolytes stopped to see him, he regarded them so intently with his cold stare that they ran off. Erin tried asking Jen questions, but he answered nothing, and Erin wondered if he couldn't or wouldn't respond. He still rejected every entreaty to take a bath, and after their earlier failed attempts, they gave up trying. They had long since accustomed themselves to his stench. As they neared Mickmere the next morning, traffic on the road swelled, slowing their pace. The avenue broadened and ran along a river between the Kingsblood Sea and the Kingsblood Lake. Mickmere surrounded the small lake, and even at a distance, the city seemed to glow in the mounting sunshine. Once they drove into Mickmere proper, Erin stared wide-eyed at Rugoth's sprawling capital, noticing several different architectural styles as they rode along. More recent structures rose several stories in the sky and had an intricate feel to them, leaves chiselled into the stone or decorative artwork painted onto pale plaster. Some buildings even reached the level of art to Erin's eye, testaments to Rugoth's prosperity and thriving culture. Glass windows, a luxurious, expensive rarity everywhere else, were in abundance in Rugoth, glinting in the sun. The clean, orderly streets, the performers, merchants, and people inspired Erin to declare Mickmere the finest city he'd ever travelled to, until they neared what Salem told him
was the damned quarter. New buildings faded to old, and beggars and refuse lined the lane in equal proportions. Buildings here sat squat, crude and misshapen from long years of abuse from the weather and from half-hearted, underfunded attempts to fix them. Salem explained how the damned quarter divided McMare into two richer parts of the city, bracketing the impoverished strip in the middle. The shortest route from one prosperous section to the other was the lane they travelled on. The rich often took ships across the lake to avoid the carriage ride through the slums. As they trundled along, a fine carriage pulled by four horses sped past them, bouncing about on the cobblestones, heedless of man, woman, or child upon the street.
"Lots of folks get hit every year on this lane. Rich folks race by like all you mark hunters when they come through here. You haven't seen the worst of it yet, though."
Erin didn't see how worse was possible until Salem turned the cart left off of the main road, heading into the heart of the old, dilapidated city. Erin guessed the first refugees from Lalmanar had built the quick buildings as a temporary solution until finer buildings like those they left behind could be constructed. Now the ramshackle homes served as places to discard the poor. It seemed the poverty, illness, and ignorance so evident all about them actually dimmed the sun, casting everything into a hazy brown shadow. Heavily tanned men and women dressed in rags shuffled about or sprawled, drunken and insensate, in the street near the most dismal taverns Erin had ever laid eyes on. Yelling, drunken mumbling, and the sounds of all manner of animals coalesced into a steady morass of cacophony that filled Erin with anxiety and even set the more experienced Salem on edge. Children, bellies protruding unnaturally forward, stared dumbly at them as they passed, some yelling for food or money. Sickness, disease, garbage. Erin felt outraged and ill. How could it be that the richest city in the world could permit such a blemish to fester upon its otherwise lovely face? At last, Baneborough Cathedral, old and sturdy, slid into view, and beyond it the street dead-ended at a gate built against a wall of rubble. Soldiers, though not sharp or particularly fit-looking ones, stood guard at the gate. "What is through there?" Erin asked.
"That, my boy, is where our young friend here will go if the prelate can do nothing for him. An evil place, that one, full of the possessed, diseased, deformed, and marked that could not be healed. I went in once, and never wished to enter again. They say the Shalane enters it from time to time to see what she can heal."
"The Shalane comes here?" Erin exclaimed. "Unbelievable. It would be beneath civility to bring an aristocrat here, not to mention dangerous."
"She's kinder than any of us, boy,"
Salem said as he brought the wagon to a halt outside the church.
"Something you have to learn, eh, Erin? Let's get him inside to Prelate Shefston."
Erin hoped Jen would be spared whatever life, if it could be called that, went on behind those gates, but as he rounded the back of the wagon he found that Jen had fallen into another stupor, though different, his eyes darting about wildly. From time to time he convulsed or yelled something in his strange language.
"Looks like he's having a fit now," Salem rumbled. "Likely the demons inside him can't stand the holy ground of the church."
Erin cursed the ill timing. If only they had arrived when he was lucid. Erin prayed that the fit would end before they found the prelate. Hefting Jen inside the church took a great deal of effort, and they settled for laying him on the dusty floor at the entrance. The church, like the neighbourhood around it, was run down and brown, dust lying thick on every flat surface. Only the smell of incense and fragrant oil in the air distinguished it from the rack of its environs.
"Where's the prelate?" Erin asked as they laid Jen down.
"I am here, acolyte."
Erin looked up. A corpulent man, quite out of character in the midst of so much emaciation, strode down the hall, kerchief to his nose and mouth.
"What did you drag in for me this time, Salem?"
Salem related how they had found him and his opinions of the boy's condition. Erin tried to contradict his master's opinions, but a dark look from the prelate's deep eyes cut him off in mid-sentence. Erin could only observe as the prelate performed a perfunctory and cursory attempt at healing Jen's mind with an exorcism.
"He's beyond our reach," the prelate concluded. "Conduct him inside the gates and be done with it." "Yes, prelate,"
Salem answered sadly.
"But he was getting better with each day," Erin protested. "I'm sure that with a little more time and care, he..."
A sharp look from the prelate brought him up short.
Salem, he said, face stern, you teach this acolyte who I am and how to respect his betters. I trust you capable of teaching the lesson?
Yes, your grace,
Salem said, not meeting the prelate's eyes. The prelate left the way he had come, leaving them to haul Jen back into the cart. A crowd of wretched poor gathered as they worked, commenting in low voices about Jen, most agape at the scars all over his body, the miserable, gawking at those more miserable than themselves.
Perhaps they find some comfort in knowing someone is worse off than they are,
Erin thought.
Prepare yourself, Erin,
Salem said once they climbed back to the cart.
What comes next will be hard for you.
They had to stop at the gates for a moment while reinforcements from somewhere nearby were called up to help. As the gates swung inward, Erin saw why. No sooner had daylight peeked between the two doors of the gate than a mad rush of the insane, sickly and half-clothed nearly overcame the resistance set against them. Only determined, well-placed violence sent them howling back into streets and alleys littered with feces and garbage. Erin swooned with the smell and horror of it all. Truly, the underworld stood agape before them, and Erin turned to look behind him to make sure the way out still existed. What houses still stood here, sagged, cracked, and mutilated, threatened to collapse with every breeze. Only stronger structures of stone stood firm, though spattered and stained with mud, blood, and fecal matter. But more discomforting than the smells, the screeches and screams, and the dilapidation of the buildings were the children of every age, most with only a scant rag separating them from nakedness, standing dumbly about the streets.
"We can't leave him here,"
Erin protested, grateful for the guards who marched warily beside them.
"Who will feed him? What if he comes out of it?"
"There's us food over the walls every night," Salem explained, face disgusted. "They have water here, though I'd sooner drink lamp oil. Get him out, Captain!"
Salem turned the cart around, and the soldiers roughly dumped Jen onto the ground. Salem wasted no time, driving out quickly as the soldiers again scuffled at the gate with the wretched denizens at the heart of the damned quarter. Erin glanced behind him as the gates swung shut. Jen had stood, regarding them coldly as they left. Erin saw sanity dawning there.
"Try not to think of it, boy," Salem said, clapping him on the back. "I don't like it, but there's nothing for it. We did our best, that's all we can do."
Erin folded his arms in disgust.
"The prelate certainly didn't do his best,"
the acolyte grumbled, mostly to himself.